Welcome to Practicing Courage, a space where we're dedicated to exploring what it means to live well and engaging in practices that support finding the courage to do so. Yesterday, I released a conversation with Dr. Vanessa Patrick, a professor of marketing and the associate dean for research at the Bauer College of Business at the University of Houston. Among other things, Vanessa researches what she calls the empowered refusal, which is a way of saying no that stems from your identity, an empowered way of saying no made possible when you have clarity about who you are, who you want to be, and what matters to you. For me, this was one of the more practical conversations I've ever had on the show, largely because saying no can be hard at times. Do you experience this? A few of the reasons why saying no can be challenging include you might feel if you say no, it could damage your reputation in some way. You might have a fear that saying no will feel bad. More specifically, that saying no will feel worse than saying yes. And at some level, you may want to avoid that discomfort. You might also be afraid saying no will upset someone, or that saying no may create a rift in a relationship. Additionally, within the context of organizations, which is an area of expertise for Vanessa, saying no can bring on additional layers of complexity. There are power dynamics at play, there's added pressure to perform, there may be a desire to move up, receive recognition, the list goes on. So, like I said, it was quite valuable to talk with Vanessa, not only because of her expertise on the topic, but also because her work truly lies at the intersection of art and science. Her research has revealed the ingredients that lead to an effective no. But like most recipes, there's also an art involved in it. And Vanessa's deep experience working with leaders and within organizations has offered further insights into that art, shedding light on really practical ways of communicating no effectively in the work environment. So for today's practice, I'll offer a few practical takeaways from the conversation with Vanessa that you can try out if you'd like to. If you want a deeper dive into this topic, though, I'd highly encourage you to check out our interview if you haven't already, and or to pick up a copy of her book, The Power of Saying No. All right, let's move into our practice. The empowered refusal relies on a foundation of clarity. Knowing what you care about, who you are, and how you want to show up in the world and the relationships that matter to you. Now, these might be insights that you're actively in touch with already. If so, great. If not, you might take some time to explore questions like, what do you value? What matters most to you? Who do you want to be? And how do you want to show up in the roles and the relationships you care about? Maybe it's as a leader, as a person, as a teammate or colleague. Getting clear on your values, if you're not already, would be the first step in this process. That clarity opens the door to say no in a way that stems from your identity. The second takeaway from the conversation with Vanessa was that there can be a sense of pressure when we're asked to do something, particularly in a work setting. Vanessa talks about this as the spotlight effect. When someone asks us to do something, maybe it's taking on a new task or a project, it might feel like you're under a spotlight. It can be hot. It can feel like things are speeding up. The pressure is on. Sometimes, people who ask us to take more on know this. Other times, that spotlight effect might be quite unintentional. Either way, if you experience this, it can be beneficial to deliberately slow down, to pause, to take a deep breath or two, and to ask for time to consider the request. While the spotlight can make it feel like an answer may be needed immediately, that may actually not be the case. And asking for time to consider it, given workload, priorities, etc., can help to parse out the actual urgency compared to what it feels like in the moment. This simple practice can, in Vanessa's words, diffuse the spotlight, literally creating more space to choose the most effective response. And again, that ability to choose becomes increasingly accessible as we slow down, find calm, and take time to reflect and thoughtfully consider the best path forward. The third takeaway was perhaps the most intriguing to me. As I was getting more familiar with Vanessa's work, she talked about how saying no can be a practice that not only doesn't burn bridges, but that it can actually strengthen our reputation. Now, I don't know about you, but that for me is pretty counterintuitive, really running counter to one of the most common fears of saying no. It will damage my reputation. Now, while there's a deeper conversation to be had here, which Vanessa shared much more about in the book, here's one key insight into how saying no can actually bolster reputation. When we say yes, and then say yes again, we eventually arrive at a tipping point. What we've said yes to becomes too much. We don't have the capacity, the resources, the time, the energy, etc. If and when we hit this tipping point, it can not only lead to stress, but our ability to follow through with quality work, or simply to follow through at all, can crumble like a house of cards. Now, you likely see where this is headed. As that house of cards topples, so does people's trust in us. So the bottom line, saying yes too much can result in a damaged reputation. And on the flip side, when we say no and actively reduce the possibility of a house of cards from being built in the first place, we strengthen our reputation as we increase our capacity for follow-through, for consistently delivering high-quality work. And in doing so, we build trust. Now, before moving to the last couple of insights, I want to name that while this might be a general rule of thumb, there's complexity here that has to do with the context, the environment, and the culture one might find themselves in, all of which are important to take into account when considering any of these insights or practices. They may look slightly different in your experience, and you might need to modify them in ways that are supportive for you. All right. Now, the fourth insight has to do with language. Have you ever paid attention to how you actually communicate your no? What is the specific language that you use? Do you have any habits or tendencies around that language? Is it language that's clear, that's firm, that's kind? Or is it language that's riddled with ambiguity, a lack of clarity, or a lack of firmness? Vanessa invites us to communicate no with language that does not invite pushback. Rather than something like, I can't right now, or I won't be able to do that, both of which can leave the door open to someone challenging our refusal, using firmer language by practicing what Vanessa calls personal policies, which are rules that we live and or work by, may be a more effective path. I've been playing around with this idea of personal policies and firmer, clearer, kinder language, and it's been a game changer. The language of personal policies, by definition, doesn't invite pushback. Instead of what you heard a moment ago, it might sound more like, I don't check emails on the weekend. I don't attend meetings before 9 a.m. I don't answer work communications while on vacation. If this idea resonates with you, I'd invite you to take a moment to think about a personal policy that you might put in place that's based upon your values, your priorities, and how you want to show up in the world. What would be a personal policy that may support you in living a little bit better? This could be an interesting question to explore, and then ultimately a practice to test out. Now, as we move toward a close, the last piece about saying no that I'd like to share is that it can take courage, particularly when the no is authentic. Have you ever thought up excuses to say no? I know I have. That is not an authentic no. Authentic no's involve the practice of being real. This practice happens when we choose to share the real reasons why we're saying no, versus making up an excuse or just making something up in general about why we're saying no. And this act of honesty and authenticity can be hard. It can feel risky, uncertain, and leave us emotionally exposed. By definition, it's vulnerable. It's the practice of being real. And choosing to be real, choosing to be vulnerable, is courageous. When we open ourselves up in this way, when we practice being real, we create the opportunity for authentic connection, for someone we care about to empathize, to show understanding, to express care. And when that happens, relationships deepen. As you move into your week, the invitation here is simple: to start where you are when it comes to saying no. Whether it's gaining clarity about what matters to you and how you want to show up in the world, whether it's trying on a personal policy, or whether it's asking for a bit more time to consider the request before responding, start where you are. Test it out. See how these practices might work for you or not in real time. Keep what works, modify as needed, and drop whatever doesn't work. Thank you for your practice today. I look forward to continuing together next Thursday.